Yeah,
yeah, no, we don't. We did a long way. I did the exercise. Okay, one.
And turns it on.
Okay. Very good. Some things don't change. Quacky.
Ah, yeah.
There we go.
Okay.
Well, look, there
I'm not
the
sure if it's turned
way.
On.
No, the other way. It's like
on the side. See the little switch?
Yeah.
Power.
It clicks over the ears.
Yeah. I,
ah, okay. Contact. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
The back of the head. Right back. That's it. Over the ears. Over the ears.
That's right. Very good. Okay, we'd like to do it out. Don't have to. Nothing to hear.
No, the other way. I'm not allowed to touch it. Because usually it goes around the bottom of your neck.
The bottom of my neck.
Yeah.
That's it, at the back. Over your ears. Over your ears.
So we have slight intermission.
This is.
Over your ears.
The other way. No. You'll have to do.
Yeah.
Do you want me to show
you?
Do you want me to show you how to put it on? This way, I'll
turn it down a bit, Steve.
Ah, oh, that's not good.
It is.
That's no fun. But you've got hair, I haven't got hair.
No, it's easy with no hair. Yeah. I get it cool.
Very good.
If not, we'll use the hand wash.
Yay!
Thank you. The sacrifice is all around. The sacrifices I have to make to be alive.
Yeah, no one can hear me.
Are you okay?
We can hear you, Doug.
Okay.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Dharma Meditation Group.
Where anything happens.
Do we have anybody here for the first time? I think
first
we have a couple.
This month.
Just a few notices to let you know how we run. Could you please check your mobile phones, make sure they're off. At about 8 o'clock, you'll hear an announcement over the PA asking you to leave. That's not for us, it's for the visitors at the hospital, so please ignore it. In the event of emergency, we go through this left door on the left here, down the passage on the left, if we have an emergency. Toilets down the passage on the left-hand side, you'll see them down there as you walk past the door you came in. Okay, I think that's it, all the notices. We're trying out a new mic, so please be patient with us. Okay, we start by citing the Metta Sutta, so that's what we're going to do first. Before we do that, I'll just introduce who we have tonight. We have Ajahn Brahm. He's the head abbot of the monastery from Serpent Time.
And what else is he?
And then he
is Wyatt.
Australia? Yeah.
He's the first abbot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Comfortable? Yeah. Yes, sir. I just was taking the mic up a little. Okay. Thank you.
Every time I burp, you hear. Okay. So, we are now, I have to speak proper now. Now I have a proper microphone. So, we are now going to recite the Metta Sutta in the Queen's English. Are we ready, gentlemen, ladies? Very good. Stop it, you're encouraging me. Or shall we do the chant first?
Yeah, go on.
Chant first, okay. I don't know how many of you sort of heard the Friday night talk about the... There was this gentleman, he answered the front door of his house, and there's this big 6-foot cockroach standing at the door, and the cockroach just punched him for no reason whatsoever. And of course he got a bit of a bloody nose, but now how can he call the police and say he was assaulted by a cockroach? So just let it go. The next day the doorbell rang, opened the door, the cockroach was there again, big strong 6-foot cockroach standing up, this time head butted him. Yeah, really hurt. Well, you know, how can you complain? you know, people won't believe you. But the third day, he opened the door, somebody knocked on the door, and there's a cockroach there. This time he knifed him. Uh-huh. Yeah, knifed him. So I had no choice, I had to call the ambulance and sort of go to the hospital. And of course the doctor asked him, you know, what caused the injuries. And he had to tell about the sort of the cockroach. And he said, I didn't think anyone would believe me. So the doctor said, no, we understand what's going on. There's a nasty bug going around. No, it's terrible.
Oh, that's good.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, you look.
Wait.
Do you want to go now? Okay, let's do the better season. They give all the cockroaches. 1, 2, 3. Here we go. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy.
Some cockroaches.
Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, the living cockroaches, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as the mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Now I haven't been on too much with you. I hear everything. Sometimes when people do anything vaguely religious or spiritual or self-help, they always think it's supposed to be miserable. There's enough misery in life as it is. So we put some energy into whatever we do. Whatever we eat, in meditation, do it energetically. We go to the toilet with energy. Whatever we do, really put on. This is actually one thing which a gentleman who... my teacher was a really famous monk, Ajahn Chah, in Thailand. And this gentleman was in Sydney, and he heard about this, you know, great monk. He went all the way from Sydney to the remote part of Thailand just to see Ajahn Chah. Didn't have time to do anything else, so he went all that way. And when he actually saw Ajahn Chah, he was surrounded by so many people, couldn't get any possibility of asking his questions, which he came all the way from Sydney for. And so when he realized after 2 hours, 3 hours of waiting, there would be no opportunity, disappointed, he got up and went to his taxi to try and get a lift back to the airport to go back to Sydney. But he realized he had a few more minutes, so he picked up a broom and did a bit of sweeping. And in that time, he felt a hand on his shoulder, turned around, and it was my teacher, Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah, through the translator, said, "If you're going to sweep, give it everything you've got." And then he left. And that little word of advice, he realized it doesn't mean just sweeping. It means whatever you're doing in your life, give it 100%. And he thought about that on the aircraft home. And so that became his very simple teaching for life. When he was relaxing, he relaxed 100%, gave relaxation everything he had. He didn't worry about the future or the work. When it was time to sleep, he just went to sleep. He gave sleeping 100%, everything he got. And when he got up in the morning and was eating, he gave eating everything he got. He put attention, enjoyed his food. When he went to work, he gave work everything he got. So everything in his day, he put 100% effort into what he was doing right now. It's like mindfulness, awareness. But in a very simple way. Whatever you do, give everything you've got. And so what happened was his family life was really very successful. Because when he's with his kids, he gave his kids everything he had. The time and the attention. With his wife, with his business, with his relaxation. When he decided to relax or play, birthday party or something, he gave that everything he had. He became a very successful man. And that's when he came and told me an anecdote which I never heard before. So whatever you do, give everything you've got. We had a big fundraiser recently at Katina, and I told the people that story. Said, when you pass the donation box, give it everything you've got. Did work. It was a trifle. But the whole theory behind it, just whatever you're doing, for goodness sake, give it some energy. So, you're meditating, you're talking, you're sort of chanting. It's really depressing. This is what will become by one who is skilled in goodness. So you put some energy into it, people will get into it. So anyway, it's not so much what you chant, it's actually how you chant it, just like life. It doesn't matter what you have to do in life. It's what you put into it is really important. It's the same as when you're meditating. Just doesn't matter how you meditate, as long as you give full attention to what you're doing. And really be here. Give it some energy. One good way of giving it some energy is making it fun. There's enough problems and problems. If you really want to be miserable, then just go and watch the TV news. They always say what goes wrong in the TV news, but sometimes you come here and you see some of the other ways of looking at life, especially with meditation, to learn how to first of all be with your body. How's your body now? Because I don't know how many people are having a birthday this week. Or maybe how many people are having a birthday this year? So, sometimes people say, "Oh, you're getting old, you're over the hill, you're getting closer to the coffin." And I say, no, you may not be as young as you used to be, but you're certainly not as old as you're going to be. So you look upon it in a positive way. And that's what meditation does. Yeah, everybody's going to die one day. But most days you don't die. And that was actually from Snoopy. Very wise dog.
Yeah.
those are the really things. It's just look at life the other way. It's exactly the same, but you look at life in another way. I was at I was telling this to somebody just a couple of days ago. There was a story, I wrote this in one of the books. There was a woman came home from shopping, you know, she's had all the bags of groceries in her arms, and just came into the house, you know, managed to open the door, kick the door open so she could get in. You know, you've done that, been there before. Now she was having her hands full, going in the house. This dog rushed past her and went into her house. And, you know, she couldn't stop the dog because she had her hands full of groceries. So she put the groceries down in the kitchen, closed the door, looked for the dog, and the dog was fast asleep in the corner of the house. And, you know, she wondered, you know, what the heck that dog was doing. It was not a stray dog because it was clean, had a collar on, obviously, you know, well looked after. It was just sleeping in the corner of her house. And so, you know, she liked dogs, you know, why disturb the dog? And let her have a sleep. After a couple of hours, the dog woke up, and gave a little bark, and so she let it out of the house. And so, same thing happened the next day. The dog came back, and the next day as well, so she let it sleep in the nice little corner of the house. It didn't do any harm. This is a lovely little, I think a Labrador dog. So after a while, she began to get curious. And I wonder where that dog comes from. It was none of her neighbor's dogs. So she had this really brilliant idea. She wrote a little note on a piece of paper. So I don't know whose dog this is, but it's been coming to my house every afternoon. And it just goes to sleep, doesn't disturb anybody. It's very welcome. I just, you know, curious, know whose dog this is and why he comes here. And so she folded the note up and put it in the collar. And so the dog went away. And of course the dog came back next day with another note in the collar. A response. She opened it up and said, you know, it's my dog. It lives now maybe about 5 minutes from here. It lives in a house with a very, very big family. My wife is very busy and I have about 5 or 6 kids. 2 are under 5 years of age. And it comes into your house for a bit of peace and quiet every afternoon. P.S. Can I come too? Says the husband. I think you can all relate to that sometimes. It's just so busy in our life and so much noise. That's what meditation is. Just learn how to relax and enjoy the peace and quiet once it's there. Instead of having to sort of turn on the TV, look at your emails, listen to Ajahn Brahm again, or whatever. Just to learn how to just relax and be peaceful. So that's what we're trying to do in meditation. To relax. First of all, our body. And then to relax our mind. Because when you relax, you take away the tension. So you can imagine a guitar string. When the guitar string is pulled apart, it's really tense. And something hits it, ping! It really makes a loud noise, it reverberates. But as you loosen the tension on the guitar string, something hits it, boom! It's very low pitch, it doesn't last long. And then when you really loosen the tension, so it's not tight at all, so there's no stress on that guitar string at all, something hits it, it doesn't even reverberate. It doesn't respond. Life's little impingements and difficulties and problems and disappointments, they don't even affect you. Because you are relaxed to the max. That's how to meditate. So simple. So, if you're trying to calm your mind down or heal your body and worrying what other people think of you, if you're trying to do something, you just get more tense. So instead of trying to do something, which is, you know, trying to change things, see if you can learn how to be here. And when you be in here, it may not be the best, it may not be perfect, but it's good enough. And when it's good enough, then you can relax. Are you perfect? Think about it. Many of you, you may think of yourselves, oh, I'm a nobody. And the next line of this argument is, nobody's perfect. You've heard that saying before, haven't you? Nobody's perfect. So if you're a nobody, that means you must be perfect. That's logic. So anyway, let's go back to meditation. Learning how just to relax. So first of all, yeah, be aware. It's wonderful in mindfulness. What actually is that? It's being in the present moment. It's one of the important parts of mindfulness. If you're off in the future, what's going to happen next? Who knows what's going to happen next? Even a few days ago, somebody actually, they asked me, can you please read their hands, tell their fortune? Monks don't do that. If I could tell fortunes, then I would need to come here. I'd be able to be in my monastery with a personal tea maker, my personal chauffeur, in air-conditioned luxury, instead of living on the floor in a cave, having to work at my age. One thing, never believe, never trust a poor fortune teller. They can't tell their own fortune, they can't tell yours. So look, forget about the future, it's totally uncertain. No one knows what's going to happen. Even, actually it was not much traffic on the road today. I wonder why, it was because it's Melbourne Cup. Sorry?
I said they're probably all at home drunk.
Yeah, I know, crazy people. And the people think they can make easy money on. But you know, sometimes there was this fellow over here in Perth that he had this have you had these really clear dreams? This guy had this clear dream. He dreamt of a horse. And the horse was called... No, it wasn't a horse, sorry. He dreamt of these five angels, first of all. Five angels. And these five angels were lining up in his dream to offer him five big pots of gold each. I mean, just really worth a lot of money. Pure gold, 100%. Big pots. And after receiving the 25th pot of gold from the five angels, he woke up, as sometimes you do in a dream. And the problem was, there was no angels in his bedroom. He didn't mind that, but there was no gold either. That was a bit of a downer. But then, he realised it was just a dream. But when he went down for breakfast, he found the newspaper. It was the 5th of May, the 5th day of the 5th month. And his wife, for some reason, had made him five boiled eggs and five pieces of toast. And he wondered, what's with number five? So he looked in the newspaper, in the sports section, the horse racing, in the race course up in, just by the river called Ascot. A-S-C-O-T. Five letters. So he decided to look in the fifth race that afternoon, and he could not believe his eyes. The fifth horse on race number five in Ascot that afternoon was called Five Angels. Now sometimes you only get these chances once in life, if at all. So it was obviously an omen. So he went to the race course in the afternoon to keep the lucky number five. He took $5,000 out. If you're going to win, you might as well win big. $5,000, he went to the bookmaker, he chose the five bookmaker in line, fifth bookmaker in line, $5,000 to win, horse number five, race number five, five angels. The lucky number five could not be wrong. The lucky number five wasn't wrong. His horse came in fifth. So, forget about asking monks who's going to win the Melbourne Cup. I did predict who's going to win though. It's going to be a horse this year. A horse. But anyway, where are we going? Oh yeah, meditation. So with meditation, we learn how to relax the body. And laughter actually does relax the body. It gets rid of a lot of tightness and tension when you... sometimes people get really scared of monks and scared of meditation. What am I letting myself into? But it's very, very easy and kind and happy and peaceful. So we learn how to relax the body. So you feel your body. So you do a little body scan with a meditation. Like just right now. Don't look, but can you feel your feet? Right now. If you can't feel your feet, just lift them up or wiggle your toes. You're mindful of your feet. You've got awareness. You connect with your feet. Once you're mindful of those feet, sometimes you can learn how to be strange but kind to your feet. Relax. Move them this way, move them that way until you can find the most comfortable position for your own feet. Simple things. Then you can move your feet if you wish. Move your legs until your body is really comfortable. You can move your knees. Move your legs forward, move, tuck your legs in until the knees become the best possible position. What you're doing is combining mindfulness with kindness and wisdom. Learning what's the best position for your own knees. Because every time you move, the feeling changes, you get what we call feedback. Your own feedback, so you can feel what's the most comfortable position. And then, of course, you adjust your butt until it's nice and comfortable on the chair. And your back. Sometimes you can stretch your back. Oh, because I learned that from watching dogs. Very wise. They stretch their backs before they go to sleep or before they meditate. I don't know the difference between the two with regard to dogs. And then you feel this beautiful endorphins go through your bloodstream. The nature's pleasure chemicals and immune suppressants, and it feels really good. Then you can relax your shoulders. Sometimes I just even ask, shoulders, how do you feel? And don't think that you don't get a response. As soon as you ask a question of any part of your body, you get a response. How's your shoulders now? How are you doing up there, shoulders? And now you can just learn by trial and error how to relax those shoulders. How to let go of the tightness and the tension. So the whole thing can just really feel at ease. And your hands, how do your hands feel? Just relax them. As you feel the best position. And your head. And your face. Relax all the muscles around your eyes and your mouth. So everything feels as easy, relaxed, as comfortable as possible. Just sometimes if you wake up in the morning, in bed, you don't have to go to work in the morning. You're not that old, you have to quickly get up to go to the loo. You don't have any sort of job to do, you're just cozy in your bed. And those beautiful feelings, you just don't want to get up. Everything is just so relaxed and peaceful. You do that when you're meditating. Everything is just very relaxed. And you get to what sometimes we call the delight of relaxation. Feels good to have no tightness or tension in your body. Everything is at ease. Number one, it gives you great health. Easy to go to sleep at night. You know, sometimes some of those emotions which cause stress in the body, you can feel them, can loose them all up. And many of the emotions, you know, which come from any anxiety, any fear, any sort of grief, any anger, any resentment, any trauma. Many of those emotions actually you can actually feel on your body. When you relax the body, even those emotions disappear. You can actually be here. And so it's a wonderful way of learning how just to first of all relax the body and also lessen the emotional turmoil of life. So once you really relax, it's delightful. The delight of meditation is important because when you feel delightful, you find your meditation goes deeper. This is a natural phenomena when you're enjoying being here. Your mind doesn't want to fall asleep, it doesn't want to go rest, it doesn't want to think about anything. You're enjoying this moment. Just a beautiful, relaxed body. Oh, this feels really good. And then, you can then start with your mind. Now, of course, many people just think, oh, what is the mind? Which mindfulness is supposed to be talking about? Many people are mindful, but they're full of the wrong things. So instead of being mindful of junk, we learn how to relax our mind. What do I mean by relaxing your mind? I started something called the peace-o-meter. Your peace-o-meter. Right now, how peaceful are you? Give it a number from 1 to 10. 1 is really peaceful, 10 is really agitated, 0 is dead. So don't go to 0. So how peaceful are you? How agitated are you? So you just give it a number. All that is a means, a trick to get you aware. This thing we call the peaceometer. You can all know how peaceful you are, how agitated, disturbed you are. It's just being mindful of that part of your inner world. But now, what makes you more peaceful? What makes you more agitated? You find out for yourself. The Course is a few hints. The future and the past just makes you really agitated. Just let that go. Just be here. Right now, it's pretty safe. No fear, Ajahn Brahm is here. So you're fine here. So right now, you can find some peace. You find the peaceometer and the needle goes down. Carrying the past. My goodness, you can't. Actually, the past is uncertain too. What you thought happened, probably didn't happen. Something similar. But sometimes we change our memories of the past over time. And anyway, it can't be fixed. Unless you're Doctor Who. Apparently Doctor Who's back. So, yeah, I used to see Doctor when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So I suppose that fixes, but that's okay because, you know, he's a time traveller, so he's already travelled 35 years. Or she now.
She. A woman now.
Yeah, 35 years.
To turn into a woman.
Yeah. But anyway, so there we go that unless you're Doctor Who, you can't change the past. But we can just let go of the past, leave it alone for a while. Have some freedom from all our worries and concerns. So that means that we can just get away from it all, as they say. Have a real holiday in the past and future. Just be here. So that's, we find out that makes your peaceometer go very, very peaceful. No worries, just being here. And stop judging and trying to get somewhere and do something. Just this is good enough. No fear, no worrying, no craving. So at this moment, you can just be. Find out what it's like just to be. There's an old saying, when you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. So for a few minutes, just don't want anything. Then you can enjoy just being in a lovely place, with good friends, with a nice, safe environment, and a very funny monk. What more can you want in life? So anyway, that's how to meditate. Okay, so now we can actually do it. So, okay, here I go, onto my seat. Oh, people ask me how have I been, I said it's up and down. You get up, you go down, you get down, you go up. It's often that way, it must be. So, here we go. Well, that's so, sitting here, close your eyes. With your eyes closed, just ask yourself, how are you sitting right now? Is it comfortable?
Now, that's just a rough adjustment. Now let's be more refined, more careful, more particular. Now, how are your feet? Do I need to have the toes opened out, stretching them? Do the feet need to be tucked further into the chair or out? Sometimes just paying a little bit of kindness to places where you don't usually show kindness or even mindfulness can really help. And just think of your feet just relaxing. So I remember times you used to have a soak your feet after going out through the snow in London, really cold, and you come back and just soak your feet in some warm water and everything would relax. It's so nice. And then you go up your body, your calves, your bones and the skin. It's almost as if, you know, they are part of you but also separate, so you can wish them well. To care for each part of your body, relaxing them. And then go to your knees. People have a lot of pain and trouble in their knees. One reason is because they don't look after them. Take them for granted. So feel the knees with your mind. Do they need to be extended, pushed apart, come together? Just experiment. A bit of trial and error until you find the best position for your knees. And even if you tried moving them this way and that way and they're still a bit tight or sore, just imagine them. And imagine them sort of as if they were just being soaked in hot water. Not too hot, but just to relax them. As if that is beautiful, easing, soothing balm. So the relaxation and comfort just soaks not just onto the surface, but really deeply into your knees and the ligaments and cartilage and whatever else is in there. So you just wish it, will it, imagine it to be easy, pain-free, totally relaxed. Then you move your attention to your thighs. It's huge muscles. They take a lot of pressure walking and doing stuff. So I imagine I can feel the tingling in my thighs. And I just relax everything. The awareness gives me the opportunity to have feedback. I can see how those feelings respond. And I go to my buttocks. Again, it takes a huge weight. So they do get squashed. I've got to make sure that they are as comfortable as possible. So sitting on a cushion, I'm going to fit it now. Fit it until I get into the best position. And I move my attention up to my waist. And I find the best position. I always stretch first. I stretch just like the dog does. And it feels really nice. And then I just relax and until I find the best position for my back today. It's not always the same. Sometimes I slump. Sometimes I'm pretty straight. Whichever works. So you're aware, gives you feedback, and you're kind to find out what is the best position for you. And I move up my back, making sure if it's curved or straight, leaning against the backrest of the chair or straight up. Again, whatever works for you now. The most important part of this is you're aware and you're finding out about your own body and how it comfortable position does change. So you find out what's the best right now. You're learning about your body. And then you usually find out about my hands, where they are, making sure they're all right too. And they're comfortable. Out to my shoulders, people who have shoulder pain or maybe from spinal injuries, you look at that and just see how you can relax to the max. Sometimes it takes a lot of try this and try that. This is how we learn, how everybody learns. They actually find out. They press some sort of button, as it were, and everything tends to get loose. They can feel relaxation happening. You're learning how to relax, ease, bring comfort to your own body. And up in your neck, it's a bit of hay fever season now, so a lot of people have little coughs. Or you may have a sore neck, so you can just move it around, or just simple kindness. It tends to relax because it takes away the tightness of fear and anxiety. If you want to cough, it's okay to cough, so don't be afraid. You have my permission and everyone else's permission too. And I usually go up my head to my face, making sure I can experience the muscles around my eyes and my mouth and my forehead. And I can feel them scrunched up, so I learn how to loosen all of those muscles by trial and error. The awareness gives you feedback, and you learn how to relax. And lastly, I go a couple of inches behind my eyes to the middle of my brain. You're not supposed to be able to experience any sensations in your brain, but it doesn't matter. Imagine this big computer or whatever you want to imagine. It's just so overworked with worries and decisions and doing stuff. Imagine it relaxing, as if your brain was turned off for a few minutes, so it could really re-energize. And there's no pressure on it to perform or to produce or make decisions. You could really have time out, your poor brain. So imagine my brain, and I just care for it. You've done so much. Now's the time for you to relax to the max. When I imagine my brain relaxing, because it feels good, all the thoughts are not necessary. And lastly, I imagine my whole body just sitting here. Every part relaxed, one by one, so the body feels good. But if it happens that you have some injury or some disease, a cancer or heart problem or a liver problem, whatever, then you find that that manifests, you can be aware of it as like a discomfort somewhere in your body. So you just allow the mind to settle on that discomfort. It's calling you, it needs some help. And then as you settle on that discomfort, then you can be kind to it. You can imagine the feelings getting less intense, less troublesome, less painful. And if you have the mindfulness, you get the feedback. What makes that feeling worse? What makes that feeling better? Can ease it off. recently there was a young girl had a twisted spine, a genetic defect. She showed me the x-ray on her mobile phone. She was supposed to have to wear a brace for months. Told her how to meditate this way and visualize her spine. The doctor, she told me, just was gobsmacked. The lower part of her spine has straightened. She's meditating. It's amazing what you can do with awareness, visualization, kindness. Until your body feels so good, so relaxed, so at ease, if you can notice the delight of relaxation, feeling of comfort, coziness, tingling, stay there. It allows your body to go to the next level of relaxation. It really is delightful. You don't want to disturb that feeling with thinking. Just stay here and enjoy it. To relax your mind. How peaceful are you? 1 to 10. 1 is really peaceful, 10 is agitated. Be aware of that imaginary needle which shows how peaceful or agitated you are. What makes that needle go up closer to 10? Investigate, find out. The mindfulness will give you that feedback. What makes that needle go down closer to 1? A lot of time it's just letting go. Letting go of trying to be something you're not. Letting go of the past and future. Just being kind, relaxing, just being here, enjoying this moment of freedom. See what makes the needle come down. So really relax in your mind. No need to work it out. You can work it out afterwards. You remember what happened and why. You begin to know how you feel, how your body works and how your mind works. And how to be peaceful. You don't have to do anything. It's almost like you're sitting down, nothing to do, nowhere to go. You don't want to go anywhere. Happy to be here. So mind gets calmer and calmer. You're worried about the future, now is where your future is made. The more peaceful and calm you are now, the the better your future. Being still, being peaceful, relaxed. See if you can notice the delight of a peaceful mind. You deserve this peace. It's always there for you, right now, once you learn how to recognize. For those of you who've learned how to start watching your breathing, just the breath comes to you. Just a way of giving your mind just something to rest on. Just like when you are floating in the ocean. Sometimes it's nice to have a board or a little boat or a rubber dinghy to rest in. So the breath is like your bed where you can rest and lay on. Laying your mindfulness on the bed of the breath, just breathing in, breathing out. Almost like a hammock by the beach. As the breath comes in, you imagine it bringing in health, energy, peace. As you breathe out, let go. Any illness, any problem, goes out with the out-breath. Breathe in peace, energy, health, the pure air coming in. The out-breath taking away all the old, used stuff which should have been let go of a long time ago. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. See if you can breathe in delightfully. Breathe out delightfully. Noticing the joy of just doing something simple. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. I'm not going to be quiet for the next 5 minutes until the meditation finishes. taking away any tension. Getting close to the end of the meditation. Just notice how you feel. How peaceful is your mind? And how relaxed your body? How pleasant it is just to sit and be. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. Please listen until the 3rd sound of the gong takes you out from your meditation. As you come out of the meditation, you open your eyes, please smile, because I've got to look at you, and it makes me feel much better if I do smile. Okay. Very good. Is the opportunity for some, it's usually questions from the box or talk about something you want me to talk about. Is there a question in the box? My goodness. If not, then I'll just make up something. I will think outside the box. You want one here? That's not a box, that's a tissue. Thank you. Want me to throw my nose? That's no question. Okay. Here we go. What is the difference exactly? That's question number one. What's the difference? The difference is only what you make of the difference between things. Between meditation and mindfulness. Well, first of all, it's how it's spelt.
Can you move your microphone? It's catching on your gown, so we're recording.
My gown.
Thank you. Your robe, I'm sorry.
Okie dokie.
Thank you.
Very good. Difference between meditation and mindfulness. Basically, that a long time ago, people would do meditation. But it was supposed to be a bit sort of weird, new age, hippie. We'd have to have incense and all sorts of stuff. So this fellow, John Kabat-Zinn mostly, he decided it's not going to get much traction in secular places like United States if you talk about meditation. So he just rebranded it, gave it a new name, called it mindfulness. And then he managed somehow or other to take away any sort of Buddhist connotations, which meant that more people would do it, do mindfulness. Apparently I was reading in Sydney, in the Anglican Diocese of Sydney, that they banned yoga, even indigenous smoking ceremonies, meditation, mindfulness, anything which was remotely sort of religious. That's really crazy stuff. But nevertheless, sometimes people are like that. They feel a bit threatened if it's something which is challenging their market share. So, because of that, he just rebranded it, called it mindfulness. It's really meditation. But I mention that because a lot of times it also meant that they could do much more research, because people wanted to make it like scientific. But I was a scientist before, and I know that some things people call what science, and basically it's sometimes people think what science is, but just even recently I already mentioned to you that lovely little story, and it was a little girl about 11, 12 years of age. I just mentioned it in passing, that she was a bright little thing, 11 or 12 years of age, but she had to wear this brace, and it was really uncomfortable. And maybe you couldn't think there was anything wrong with her, but if you didn't wear this brace to straighten up her spine,
and she'd be in big trouble later on in life, and she'd even end up being sort of in a wheelchair. So then this poor girl is really uncomfortable. She said, please, please, is there any other way I can heal this back? So I told her about trying to do some meditation of mindfulness, and my goodness, it worked really, really well. So this little girl, you know, she showed me her deformed spine, and the spine where it was all, this is the bottom part of it, there's two parts of it. But she was trying the first one first, and it really worked. So there's sometimes in science, because I was a theoretical physicist before, sometimes scientists can be so blind. They're good, but sometimes that they also need to have a bit of a kick up their backside. Just like my friend, he was blind. I forgot what his name is now. Cracky. I've been meditating. You know, the trouble is, I gave this talk once over in Singapore in the hospital, Lin Chi Hospital. It was a talk about dementia. And we had like the meditation part of dementia and how meditation can help you stop dementia. But also I had this expert, this professor, who was a professor of dementia in Singapore. And he was saying, but you know what the symptoms of dementia are? Is, you know, you don't really think about the past, you don't worry about the future, and you're socially disengaged. Now, when he said that, I've been teaching people to do that for years. Dementia is my fault. But anyway, this person, Bernard Carr, and we had lots of fun together, Bernard, because we were at college together. She's late tonight. Yeah, okay. Anyway, but Bernard Carr, he was actually the first Buddhist I ever met when I went to university. So we became really close friends. But he was also into theoretical physics, like me, and he was also into psychic research. We would go hunting ghosts together. And it was really good fun. We were young people, we were not scared of anything. And it's good fun trying to find a ghost, and also astronomy, and also Buddhism. So we kept in touch. Now those things actually, they all go together, because you're really looking, you know, for what happens in life, and about sort of the meaning of life, and not being afraid to challenge and to experiment. So anyway, that I knew he, you know, was really pursued his theoretical physics. I never knew how close he was to Stephen Hawking, the famous professor, because apparently that Bernard Carr, my friend, he was a professor of theoretical physics in Queen Mary College in London, that he was featured in the film of Stephen Hawking, so much so that he was invited to the premiere on the red carpet in sort of Leicester Square, he said. He was a scientist, he never expected ever to be in a red carpet. But, you know, Stephen Hawking was really close to him and came to his wedding. And anyway, that he was telling me, as well as being a top physicist, so Bernard, he was also into psychic research and also into the science of perception. And he told me about the famous flower pot experiment, which was done in Imperial College in London. Now you can imagine, Imperial College was a very famous university, part of London University. And so he managed to, oh, actually one of his friends, managed to invite all his famous professors and lecturers to a demonstration and a laboratory situation of levitation. And he was so well known in the science that he managed to get many of these professors
and researchers, experimental scientists, into the lecture theatre. And he came into the lecture theatre carrying a flower pot and put it on the bench. And he said had cameras, videos, infrared, people were welcome to take any photos they wanted, because if it did happen, they wanted to have it recorded for posterity. And so when he started the experiment, he said he wanted the help of all these professors in the audience, all these English professors. He said, I need you to create the right atmosphere by all chanting Om. That's what they had to do. So he managed to convince all these professors, and they all were chanting Om, Om, Om. And with the cameras rolling, that flower pot lifted above the bench. It actually levitated. It was recorded, photographed, the levitating flower pot. Now afterwards, they asked many of those professors, and some of them said, what are you talking about? That flower pot never levitated. It was on the bench all the time. It never moved. And they showed them photographs. Ah, oh, that's fake. That's photoshopped. You know, it's not real. I was there. It didn't move from the bench. And that was the whole point of the experiment. Because the truth of the matter was that underneath that bench, they previously installed an extremely powerful electromagnet to raise the flower pot just by ordinary electromagnetism. But you all know if ever you turn on a very powerful current, you can hear the humming. So they had to get all these professors to go om, 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 to mask the trick that it was really just electromagnetism, that's all. But that wasn't the point of the experiment. The point of the experiment was that flower pot did raise above the bench, but people couldn't see it. Because even though you're a trained scientist, trained observer, if something is so much against what you think is possible, or if it's so sort of out of the ordinary, when they say it can't be true, you don't even see it. It's actually blocked out before it comes to your conscious awareness. And that was the amazing part of this. That mindfulness, a lot of the time, you only see what you want to see. You only be aware of what fits into your worldview. That's why it can be quite challenging at times. But meditation, when you get to the full meditation, maybe you can see a ghost. Maybe there are ghosts. We're just talking on the way here about snow and cold. When I was in Bhutan a few years ago, I asked our guide, is there such things as yetis? The abominable snowman. And this, my guide, you know, he was half the year in the United States, in California, half the year in Bhutan, taking people on tours through Bhutan. He said, of course there are. I said, you know, you're talking to a monk. You know, you're a Buddhist, it's really bad karma. And I said, no, it's true. And he said, in his house, his father had got a yeti skin in his house, which he kept for good luck. I don't know why, but that's what he said. And he said, oh, can we go and see one? And he showed me on the map, it's about a week's trek into one of the remotest parts. Is that true? There are yetis? Sometimes people say, no way, it can't be true. But then sometimes you see things in your life which just, it shouldn't be happening. But it is. And as a scientist, that's what's the most fascinating.
to see things which are beyond comprehension. Things which you can turn to your eyes, it's just like, you know, like hitting your body. At so many occasions when people should have been dead for a long time ago, but they use some like a meditation and they heal themselves. It's amazing. And this is, I remember old George. I haven't seen him for a while, he's probably dead now, you know, he pushed it off for quite a few years, his death, but it has to catch up eventually. But George, he used to come here, remember the old Cockney George?
Yeah.
He's well known in our monastery because I was the only one who could understand what the heck he was saying. Because it's really a thick Cockney accent. But anyway, good old George, he told me his story, that he was a smoker, he had lung cancer, and you know, it soon got so bad he went to his oncologist over here in Armidale, and the oncologist, you know, showed him the x-ray, you know, it's in all his lungs, all over. There was no sort of real solution, because if you just gave surgery, you'd have to take all the lung out, nothing left. You could give him a chemotherapy or radiation therapy, it would only increase his life maybe a couple of months, maybe 3 months. But he said the oncologist was willing to do that. And George said, I'll just talk it over with my wife. And he told me how he went back to see, you know, to 1 week later. But the obvious, you know, why go through all that expense and trouble just to, you know, extend your life for a couple of months? So he said, no, just let nature take its course. But the doctor insisted on doing another x-ray just to see how the cancer had progressed. And that was the point where he took the, went into the oncologist's room, the oncologist was looking at the new x-ray. And the oncologist was looking at the new x-ray and just shaking his head. And poor old George got so worried, he said, how long have I got? No, not even 2 months, a week. And that's when the doctor said, oh, look, George, the cancer's gone. All gone, totally. What the heck have you been doing? He didn't say what the heck, he said another word, apparently. But I was sensitive, Mark, I can't see. Because the doctor was stunned. He said, because, you know, that I've been meditating. So told, carry on. They don't give people extra hope, but it's this something you can do to take a little bit of charge over your illnesses, because that's one of the worst things when people have illnesses. You feel just so helpless. No one can sort of assist you, and isn't it? That is even humiliating sometimes. Just doctor tells you what you should be doing, and you know, doctor doesn't give you much hope at all. But actually, to take charge of your own illness, at least take part charge, so you can contribute, that really helps, even psychologically. And unfortunately, the doctors are often wrong. Many, many times what I've seen in my life, just sometimes it just really sort of moves you to see how people who should be dead aren't, should be in pain, aren't. And these are one of the most moving of those was this lady who wrote to me, emailed from, I think, East Europe. She had arthritis, and it's a very painful disease. You know, I don't know if there's any cure. You can take painkillers, but that's the best. And she wrote, so she had to take these very, very terrible painkillers. She had no choice just to get through the day. And sort of it was, had really bad side effects. But then she learned some meditation, some kindness and relaxation. She wrote this beautiful letter which I'll never forget. She said, thank you, Ajahn Brahm, I don't need the painkillers anymore because the arthritis is gone. I never thought that was possible, except when you can actually feel just how that can work on your own body and how you can take a part of your body, be aware of it and relax it so much that you can take away aches and pains and diseases. I remember even
Ajahn Chah saying once that he always used to have malaria, because malaria is one of those forest diseases in those days. It was just part of being a monk. He said one day he had this terrible, terrible fever. He decided instead of actually trying to beat the fever, he would just stay with it. He said he went right in the centre of this fever. It was like a fire. It got hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter, and then it just exploded. And that was the end of any malaria for him. Never got it again. Because that's, you know, what I remember when I had my experience with just the food poisoning. Because if any of you come to monastery, you know that there's all sorts of food there on the sort of the tables, and you'll say, "Well, this is very delicious, Ajahn Brahm. You have to have some of this. I made it especially for you." And so is this delicious? Have some. I don't know what you got in the food. So sometimes, you know, you get indigestion. Sometimes, in this case, food poisoning is what I call an occupational hazard for a monk, because you don't know what you're eating. You cook it. So anyway, this time I had real food poisoning. You know, when you know you have these cramps and unbearable pain. So I was in my cave, you know, where I live in Bodhidharma Monastery, and every now and again just to stop. Ah! I always do that about this time because people get sleepy. You know, it's a bit sort of warm in here and you get a bit bored at the end. Ow! Especially when these kids listen to a talk, because they love that part. That's the only thing they remember, the jokes. It was like that. I mean, you just got totally automatic. You know, you scream. But you're in your cave. The cave is soundproof, so no one will come. So anyway, I don't need that. So it's just exactly what I teach you. I do it myself, just go with the pain, just right into it. And relax. Don't be afraid, just relax to the max. And then you can feel the pain just get slightly less each time. Instead of ah, it goes ah. Not quite like that, but you get the point. And then it's time you talk about, I was at 20 or 40 minutes, something around that time. And that was the last of the contraction, all gone, all finished. No food poisoning at all. Totally relaxed. So, or like a time when, not this time, I went to Korea recently, but a few years ago when I was in Korea, it was really minus 16 degrees, snowing outside, really cold. And I've got a cold, a chill. I was about to go on TV, live TV, just around the country, and you can't sort of go on TV with a snotty nose. That's really terrible. It was really gross. So I thought, oh, what am I going to do? I've only got 20 minutes. I didn't have any medicine, so I meditated. Just felt the sort of the pressure on your nose and the irritation. Just be kind to it. Just relax it little by little by little by little by little by little. Just like I was saying, that watching your body and just learning how to relax to the max. Obviously, I've been doing this for a long time, so I know how to relax to the max. Look how I'm sitting, just relaxing to the max. Because of that, it went away. So I could give the interview, and it was just, my nose was, the need to blow or wipe it at all. Well, that does, it gives you some idea of just how you can take a bit more charge of your body and just your health. This last time I was in Korea, I think I told I told Rachel about this, that during our retreat period there was this invitation to go to the demilitarized zone because apparently I was told that Mr. Trump and Mr. Kim fell in love. That's what he said. But anyway, so the people in Korea, they wanted to work and to build on that sort of rapprochement. So we did a meditation day up in the demilitarized zone. And Ajahn Gunha was there and a few other senior monks. So it was such an important event that I asked the other monks in Bodhidharma Monastery, got permission from them to go to Korea for one day.
one day travelling, one day there, and one day coming back. And it was worth it because there's about 6,000 of the Koreans there, Korean Buddhists, and they didn't tell me until the last minute they wanted me to do some walking meditation with everybody inside the demilitarized zone. So for 6.5 kilometers, and I was just inside there and back again. It was about a 3-hour walk, and so this was, so you had to get all the permissions and everything, so the soldiers let you through the gate, only 100 people at a time, because they had to know exactly how many people were there, and that's as much as they could count. And so we walked and through the DMZ between South Korea and North Korea, and it was a wonderful feeling, except for the shooting. There was shooting, as I told Rachel, and I was shot many times. And no exaggeration, I can't lie to you, there was shooting and I was shot. Click, 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 camera zooming. Don't shoot. But it was actually wonderful to be able to actually do that and to let people relax. And I told the monks that 3 hours of solid walking. You know what happens? It's weird because I'm not supposed to be the fittest of monks. That's probably as much as I've walked all year combined. But when you got tired, instead of actually just slowing down or taking a rest, I decided to walk faster. It's hard. I was really walking fast, and some of the other monks could hardly keep up. They wondered, the younger ones, so how come he does this? Just sometimes this, the mind and just the power of it is huge. So that's actually, and afterwards, no trouble at all. So anyway, that sometimes test out your own intuition, wisdom about your body and your mind and how it sort of works together. And so with meditation, I've seen amazing stuff which people can do. What a wonderful thing it is that you have an opportunity. I'm not guaranteeing anything. Please go see the doctor. Don't just meditate. But nevertheless, it's amazing the sort of stuff which I've seen. And the last little bit of, well, what he got over time. The last little piece was this, I'll never forget, this oncologist over in Malaysia who was driving me to, she was in a car with somebody else, driving me to, I think, Penang to start a retreat. And she said to me, she was about to retire, and that she'd been all her life in oncology and her cancer treatment. She says, now when a patient comes into my rooms, I don't need to look at the CT scan, the biopsies, the stage of their cancer. She said to me, I can just look at them and just tell with 90% accuracy who's going to survive, who isn't. Just by their attitude. That's a wonderful thing, which she said. And of course, you may know that I do a lot of work with, let's call it Solaris now, Cancer Support Association. I've been working with them for about 30 years now. And the head, Ross Taylor, known him for such a long time, and he was saying that they invite me every year, and I go to, they come to Bodhinyana Monastery every year because there's something which we know which helps enormously, training of the mind. So this mindfulness can be very powerful. I've seen it happen, so I can't deny that as a scientist as well as a monk. Interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Any questions about that? Because it's a nice little topic. Can I
just make a comment? I once heard a definition around meditation and mindfulness, which was that meditation is the process and mindfulness is the outcome.
Yes.
People
like definitions. They like to try and capture things.
Yeah.
And to me, that these things, they cannot ever really be captured.
Mm-hmm.
know, people like definitions of, you know, like a cancer, a lung cancer, stage 3, stage 4. There's no such thing. And it's just a way which somehow just people feel comfortable, they sort of know where they are. But everything which I've ever seen, as many people have cancer, there's that many different types of cancer. As many people have experience in meditation, they're all absolutely different. Mm. I spend a lot of time just watching my breath, and every breath is different. Mm. Millions of breaths, no two are the same. No two monks, nuns, no two human beings are the same, ever. We always like to categorize and define, put things in boxes. Sometimes, yeah, I'm not going to do a thinking outside the box joke again, but sometimes, you know, that stops people. Yeah, so anyway. Very good.
Can I ask one?
Yeah.
It may look silly, but no, please.
No, please.
If by being calm in our soul, by doing whatever mindfulness and things, can we have any impact outside our other person?
I was like, oh, yeah, of course. Because there was one of my books, Open the Door of Your Heart, the German translation was called The Cow Who Lost His Happiness. Mm. And it was a legitimate bestseller over there in Germany. And it was a story of an elephant who became cranky. And no one knew why. They thought it must have some disease or something. But they found out the cause was there was a group of thieves were meeting behind the elephant stall every night to plan their naughty escapades. And even though an elephant can't understand human language, still could pick up on the vibes, on the energy of the people. Mm-hmm. So they had the elephant, they had the thieves arrested, not the elephant. And in the story, replaced them by monks, nuns, did some chanting, meditating, and the elephant changed. And it was the story behind one of the Buddha's sayings, association with good people is very beneficial. Associated with bad people actually brings you down as well, even if you don't understand the language. So that's one of the reasons why people come, if they have plenty of problems and difficulties, they come and stay in a monastery or the nuns' monastery, and the good energy, you say the nuns, actually brings them up. But the problem is the bad energy brings the nuts. But they're really resilient, so they're good, no problem at all. But that is true. Good people actually do create sort of goodness around them. Even if they don't speak and you don't understand the language, still, kindness and softness. Somebody once explained it. I'm going on retirement, I haven't been here for 3 months. They explained it in a very beautiful symbol that some people have got like spikes coming out of them, mm-hmm. invisible spikes. You can't see them, but you can feel them. Like some people have got such long, sharp spikes. They come into the room, you feel really uncomfortable, you really get scratched. You want to get out of the room as fast as you can. Most people have got sort of long spikes, but not that long. So, you know, unless you really get to know them, you don't want to sort of spend too much time with them. Other people, especially your friends, loved ones, they've got small spikes. But you get too close to them and you get scratched. And there are some people who've got no spikes at all. Very rare, beautiful people in this world. Get as close as possible and crack jokes or would offend other people. It doesn't offend them. The spikeless people in the world. That's beautiful. And so when you're around somebody like that, it's got no spikes, you just don't want to leave. Remember that this one monk, he was one of these cancer people sent back to his monastery to die. 25 years later he died. It was just a beautiful monk when I went into his presence. I had all these questions I wanted to ask. I was a young monk. And just, they all evaporated, no questions at all. Just such kind and welcoming and no judging at all. And I just wanted to stay there and die there the rest of my life. I just felt so loved. I accepted with all my faults, all my stupidities, still, all my bad jokes, it didn't matter. It was just like a, even better than a mother, like a grandfather.
Mm.
You know, a beautiful grandfather would just love you to bits. And, I don't mind your mum and dad say, you know, I love you, you're good enough as you are. And you really felt that. Absolutely total 100% acceptance. Didn't have to change. I always remember that, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
If you have that experience, it's wonderful. And you know how to love other people. You don't change them, they're good enough. You're never going to change me, Rachel. I'm always going to tell the bad jokes. Every week. Sometimes the same old ones. Okay. Okay. Yeah, well, we're the only time.
Never mind. A little bit over.
That's good.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
On behalf of the group, Arjun, thank you very much for your
cheers.
Mindfulness and relaxing meditation talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't really have a lot of any notices, I should say, tonight.